meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hello, everyone out there in Winds of Change land. I hope you're enjoying a fine lunch hour. Nothing could add to the enjoyment of a good lunch hour like the Winds of Change, especially on Wednesdays. You are here. Very good. I'm glad all my friends came along with me. I'm here to try to wrinkle your brain, give you juice in your coffee.
You just wrinkle my brain, man.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. And, I got so much here on my plate again. You're just going to have to bear with me, my friends. But first, I have to announce something. I just was beautifully informed that today is an anniversary. For those who know, especially this beautiful church right along the Dan Ryan Expressway, St. Stanislaus Kostka, where the beautiful shrine to Divine Mercy is here. Thanks be to the hard work of all the people of St. Stan's, especially with Father Tony Bush. God bless him. Today's the ninth anniversary of the unveiling. And I was told maybe one of the great men behind that project, Oscar, may be dropping in. We'll see. We'll at least get to wave to him or something of the sort. But God bless him and so many other people that have been able to bless the work of the church in this regard, especially the many parishes of the diocese, especially here at beautiful St. Stan's, the shrine, the Adoration Chapel, and this radio program that I know it touches a lot of people, and it's filled with content that you rarely get in other places. So tuning into the Winds of Change truly does wrinkle your brain. It does give you a sense of the church, the world, some of the struggles we are engaged in, and how does Father Tony say it? He shares with you the struggles and the pain, and as we walk together, enduring the crosses that we carry. So, if you're in the neighborhood anytime, stop in and make a beautiful visit to this Adoration Chapel. Or find, I said the other day at one of my sermons, and I'll repeat it here because I think it is something for us, that getting adoration, getting at least a half an hour of adoration in, should be considered by all of us as strong as an obligation as getting to Mass. Obviously, it's not part of the Third Commandment, or if you miss adoration, you don't have to confess it in confession like you do if you miss Mass. However, in your own heart, you should have it as such a high priority. Spend a little time in that quiet, contemplative prayer with our Lord in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament. What can be better than that? It's truly beautiful. Now, before I get into another important topic, because I brought along another clip. Nick, it's a kind of a long clip if you're going to have to watch. Before I get to that one, because it's, again, one of my great heroes. I don't know why I do this. I've got to apologize before I do it, because I am plagued with this quest for the truth and a sense of error when I see it, even when I refer to some of my great heroes. And I'm going to do that by pointing out something that I think needs to be pointed out from a great American historian by the name of Larry Swihart. Some of you may know the book that he and Michael Allen put together, A Patriot's History of the United States, a very, very good history of the United States that sheds light on the great challenges that were faced and the great achievements that were accomplished. I'm not just pointing out so much a negativity that is part of a retelling of the American story, as it were. So, but be that as it may, I feel bad because last Wednesday I shared with you a little meditation I had, but we kind of ran out of time at the end of the show. I didn't get to get the conclusion in, and it's a meditation on one of the major issues in the news today that I'm just at a loss in some ways. And it's about President Trump and the Russian collusion issue, which is so dominant in so much of the news. But I want to share with you a different take, a take that I guarantee you haven't heard on any of the other news outlets. So this is how I introduce the idea. We've all heard the old saying, don't try this at home, we're professionals, right? It is said often on shows like Mythbusters. Do you ever see that one? I like Mythbusters. On Mythbusters, there was a show one time I watched that tried to demonstrate if it is really possible to dodge a bullet. Okay, there's the myth. I can dodge a bullet. So they set out to do an experiment. A man with a bulletproof vest attempted to dodge a bullet fired at him from various distances. Well, don't worry, my friends, I was not even tempted to try that experiment at home. Actually, the conclusion of the experiment was no. The fastest man could not dodge a bullet, even at quite a few paces away. If you got like a mile or something, it even was a challenge, but it was somehow very, very far distance, or even the marksman hardly could hit the target, as it were. But be that as it may. So I bring this little idea to your attention because a strange phenomenon is occurring in the news these days. It reminds me of this old saying because it shows that what some amateurs are trying to do is better left to professionals. You may have caught wind of a little debate going on about the president's collusion with Russia. Who said what? When did who know about what was said? Who told who? Who leaked information to whom? With or without official authorization? It seems that the people who are most upset with the fact that Russia may have had some influence in our election are the same people who have been promoting and praising the belief in a world without borders. Well, I'm old enough to remember the old Beatles song, Imagine. You remember it, don't you? Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do, nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say that I'm a dreamer. I better not keep going on singing. You know the song I'm talking about. And it offers a view, a worldview, a vision, a philosophy of life, as it were, that unites the human race, that sees the world without borders, that sees the world without the need even of governments, as it were. So, if the people who consider themselves more progressive have been singing the blessings of this universal family of man and an understanding of human nature that is open to people of different cultures and different ways of thinking, are all of a sudden angry that some of our fellow men are sticking their noses into our American business. I believe they need to explain to the rest of us why they are so upset that Russia may have had some influence in our election. Are you following me? By all rights, if the spirit of the Beatles is true wisdom, shouldn't they be happy that people from a different culture who think differently than we do help to contribute to the election of our president? So, even if it is discovered that someone in Russia had candidate Trump on speed dial and talked to him every week, wouldn't that be a reason to rejoice and not condemn? If such progressive thinkers are sincere about the global family and the importance of accepting people who think differently than themselves, why is there a scandal in all this collusion stuff? I just don't get it. Well, actually, I do understand something. The idea of accepting people who think differently than they do is only acceptable to them when those people actually think the way they do. This present contradiction found in the minds of people who embrace the Beatles' wisdom about no countries while condemning the president for talking with people of another country is actually not as dumb as it appears. Actually, it can be seen as a good example of what G.K. Chesterton calls one of the paradoxes of Christianity. When you think about it, the Bible teaches us that when God created the Garden of Eden, there were no countries, there were no presidents, there were no borders. Come to think about it, there weren't any clothes either. But recreating the Garden of Eden and healing the dysfunctional global community of mankind is really a noble effort. It's really hard work. But secularists and believers alike have been working at it for thousands of years. The progressives who think they can do it with God are in way over their heads. This project is best left to professionals like those who think theologically, those who have a sense of truth that will unite people across borders, across cultures, and across even religions. The discovery of universal truths is what is the only thing that can create a universal family of man. And so I repeat, trying to create a universal sense of the family of man is a noble pursuit, but it is a very difficult task, and should be left to us professionals. So don't try this at home, my friends. Do you get what I'm saying? See, I'm trying to expose a kind of contradiction.
Wow.
There.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Well, I appreciate that, Nick. You can see how the brain gets wrinkled when we dive into these matters. Well, in order to let your brain heal a little bit, let's take a little break, and take a sip of whatever you're drinking, and come back soon. I'm Father Tom Coyce. I'm sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Hey, this is Vinny. You remember me. St. Stan School and City Life are presenting the first annual car show this Saturday, June 3rd. Now, I want you to bring your car to check it in between 10 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. Yeah, there'll be food, games, cars, and suds, too. All day fun for the whole family until 5 p.m. That's right. There'll be awards for the top 30 cars. Maybe it could be your car. Maybe not. People's choice, of course. It's a democracy, right? Participate vehicle registration at ststanschicago.org/event-forms. The registration is only $20 per car. You want to learn more? Call this number, 773-278-4560. 773-278-560. And the proceeds go to St. Stan's Catholic School for Leadership, hosted by City Life Chicago. Bring your wheels this Saturday, June 3rd. Check your car in between 10 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. at St. Stan's School, one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. And I'll be looking for you.
The Winds of Change on AM 750. WNDZ, and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's, once many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome everyone. Oh, this is the first weekend of June already. Isn't that incredible? Oh my gosh, years. And it being the first Saturday, I want to remind people to heed our Blessed Mother's call. I've asked that we do five consecutive first Saturdays, make it to Mass Saturday. I'm starting, I felt convicted, my friends, I must say, that as I was, as we were preparing for and I was reading and praying about the 100th anniversary of Our Lady's apparition at Fatima, and obviously, well, maybe not so obviously, but just so you know, one of her requests is that we pray the rosary daily. And also make five first Saturdays. We need to pray for that peace in the world today, just as much as in the time of World War I and World War II. Fairly convinced of that. And there was another, every week it seems, there was another Christian group of people that was massacred, another car bomb. They're just weekly events. It's so very sad, and yet we're not hearing them as much. What's dominating the news is the possible collusion between Trump and Russia, and that's why I couldn't help but share. Hopefully, you caught the first segment of the show. If not, remember, go online and you could easily podcast. You can podcast these great shows. You go online to windsofchange.com and follow the instructions for podcasting. You do need some kind of device, as we call them today, that you can download audio. And so if you have, I download mine onto my iPad because iTunes is right there, and it walks you through a lot of it. Some people have something called an iPod. It's a smaller little device you can put in your pocket. I like the bigger one with the screen. I have an iPod that has no screen, and sometimes it's hard to find what you're looking for. You really got to know how to push those little buttons to navigate through. But if you have one that has a screen, it's much, much easier to find what you're looking for, as it were. So, and then you can plug that into your car, and if you have a car that has a 3.5 jack, do you know what I'm talking about? 3.5 millimeter, that is. It's the little thin male side of a plug that goes into a jack in car. The new cars had it. Some cars even have USB ports now. So, but the general way of running a audio file is to plug in just the headphone kind of jack, as it were. So anyways, you can go there and download Winds of Change. Fill up your mornings, your noon times, your evenings with good conversation, good food for the brain, as it were. And that's what I'm going to do now, because one of my heroes, as I often say, is the guy who's on, at least at this time now, he's in California, he's on in the morning. Over here, he's on at 11 to 2, Dennis Prager. And he has something called Prager University, which I like to share with other people, and I think they're doing such marvelous work. And so I hesitate to do what I'm going to do right now, but I think it has to be done, because you can get lots of good information, you can get lots of good thoughts just by going to the Prager University. Go to it, soak it in. But when theology comes to the forefront, sometimes, again, like I said before, I'm worried when it's left to amateurs. You must allow us professionals to do the most important theological training and work. And that sort of leads up to what this is about. That the American historian Larry Swihart, who wrote, and I'm still digesting it, I'm plowing through it, a big 900-page, let's see how many pages, 900-page volume of American history. So it's going to take a while to plug through it, but it's well worth it. Let me read what is being said about, and I agree, he's putting his finger onto something very, very important. The book is pretty like this. Is America's past a tale of racism, sexism, and bigotry? Is it the story of a conquest and rape of a continent? Is U.S. history the story of white slave owners who perverted the electoral process for their own interests? Did America start with Columbus's killing of all the Indians, leap to Jim Crow laws, and Rockefeller crushing the workers, then finally save itself with Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal? The answer to these questions, of course, is no, 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 and no. One might never know this, however, by looking at almost any mainstream U.S. history textbook. Having taught American history in one form or another for close to 60 years, between them, Larry Swihart and Michael Allen are aware that, unfortunately, many students are berated with tales of the founders as simply self-interested politicians and slaveholders, of the icons of American industry as robber baron oppressors, and of every American foreign policy initiative as imperialistic and insensitive. The authors of A Patriot's History think that an honest evaluation of the history of the United States must begin and end with the recognition that, compared to any other nation, America's past is a bright and shining light. America was and is the city on the hill, the fountain of hope, a beacon of liberty. They utterly reject, my country right or wrong, what scholar wouldn't. But in the last 30 years, academics have taken an equally destructive approach. My country, always wrong. Schweikart and Allen reject that too. So I preface what I'm going to share with you now with this great admiration for their work in American history to tell the tale. And you might even sense, if you know and you listen to the Winds of Change, especially here on my Wednesdays, you've heard me refer to the phrase, unlike other nations, which is what I ask you to send me when I ask you to send me an email to unlikeothernations@gmail.com. You might be thinking, listen, Father Coys is exactly saying what these two American historians are saying. And you almost would be right, because I do have a sense that this wonderful country of ours, the United States of America, has a very insignificant role, has played a very significant role in history, and has that role and needs to find that role again, as it were. But the phrase, unlike other nations, doesn't exactly refer only to America. It is more theologically, more biblically founded, because, as I've said before often on this show, that the idea of being a nation unlike other nations really was the original idea that God had for his first nation, the nation of Israel. Isn't that something? You can read that in the 8th chapter of the first book of Samuel, because Israel wanted to be a nation like all the other nations. And it was when the nation of Israel decided it wanted to be like other nations, they lost God's favor. God was disappointed with Israel when all they wanted to be was a nation like other nations, especially in the idea that other nations had kings and other nations had taxes and other nations had armies. And so they wanted to be like other nations. And God was disappointed. So as much as our country here in the United States just tries to be like other nations, I believe that we can disappoint God in the similar way that Israel disappointed God. And one of the key factors of Israel's disappointment was the fact that they neglected the Ten Commandments. And so much as our United States helped promote and establish a country and a society that was well-founded on the Ten Commandments, they were indeed trying to be a nation unlike other nations. Okay, so that's my intro. So what I'm going to do is we're going to play one of the great clips from the Prager University. And Nick, I'll need you to pause and start, because it's a 5 minute. That's not too long in terms of clips when you're watching something. As a matter of fact, I always kind of wish they would go longer, but they keep them at 5 minutes so that they would get young people to listen to them. And we all know that young people won't listen to something more than 5 minutes if it's trying to wrinkle their brain. They will listen to something more than 5 minutes if it's something fun or entertainment value, of course. But if it's in somewhere close to the category of educational, that has to be limited to 5 minutes. So that's what they do. And that's, I think, a good thing. That's what, you should go, if you have YouTube, please go to YouTube and register to my YouTube channel. I don't have quite the million listeners and viewers that Prager University has, but go to YouTube and please just type in Unlike Other Nations, and you will find some of Father Tom's short 5-minute clips, as it were. Okay, I haven't done one on this one yet, but I will. But here we are. So Larry Schweikart, the author of this great American history book that's trying to put American history in a little better light than what most of the young people have received in their high school or even grade school and college education, with facts, with much supporting. So, but he's going to swim with the sharks. He's going to swim in theology. He doesn't realize he's doing it, but he is doing it, and you'll find out right quite quickly. So, there are. I don't want to say he's telling untruths. What he's saying is true, and I think in many ways can be applauded. The title of this clip we're going to listen to is Religious Tolerance Born in America, or Religious Tolerance Was Invented in America. And in the process, he talks about the forming of the United States. And I first wanted to stop it and say, wait a minute, here's a lie, here's a lie, here's a lie. But they're not really lies, but they are half-truths. Do you know the difference? Let's think about that. A lie is a lie, and it's not at all fair to say that anything he's saying is a lie. Nothing is untrue. However, but to discover a half-truth is a very important discovery. And one of my favorite phrases of being Catholic and holding on to Catholic theology is the phrase, the fullness of the faith, right? The fullness of the truth. So when you have the fullness of the faith, you can see half-truths more easily, more clearly. You can even see them where others don't see them. So maybe we'll start this. We'll get in a break here in a second or two. But let's start it with Larry Schweikart, and this is how he begins his.
Each year, the President of the United States lights a national Christmas tree, hosts a Hanukkah party at the White House, and issues a proclamation honoring Ramadan. Only in America. Indeed, America is known for religious tolerance. In fact, it is not an exaggeration to say that America, where people of all faiths are free to worship or not worship as they please, invented modern religious tolerance. This tolerance, which Americans take for granted, didn't exist anywhere in the world before America invented it. How did this happen? To answer that, we have to look to America's origins, which were overwhelmingly religious and, to be precise, overwhelmingly Christian. To put it another way, America became the religiously open nation that we know today because it was first a Christian nation, specifically a Protestant one. Let me explain. Until the beginning of the 16th century, religious life...
Okay, let's pause it right here for a second, because maybe we can... I need to... before we go into a break, I want to applaud what he's saying here. It's very important to appreciate the contributions that the United States had on the world scene throughout world history in dusting off, in elevating or recovering the great virtue of freedom. It's hard to deny that. There was a great sense of America was going to be founded on freedom. Although that's to be applauded. I applaud it. Everyone applauds it, I think, except the most radical of tyrants. And they want you to believe they are creating free society while taking away more and more of your freedom. And so much of the dialogue and discussion of what's going on today deals with freedom. A pet peeve that I have, my friends, and please be aware of this, is when you hear discussions and religious freedom comes into the play, which it often does, and it should. But oftentimes, you'll hear a phrase something like this: "We are promoting, and we are a country based on freedom and liberty." They use those two phrases. They put that word "and" in the middle. we are defending and we are promoting freedom and liberty. And it kind of sounds, it sounds good because you're putting two virtues together. And there's a sort of a instinct of what G.K. Chesterton in his great Catholic wisdom teaches us. When G.K. Chesterton speaks about virtues, he says this in his beautiful book, Orthodoxy. He says, one virtue standing alone can be a monster. Real virtue is always connected to other virtues. They're sister virtues. You need to have at least a tripod of virtues that keep you balanced, as it were. A insane man, this is in the chapter on the maniac, I think is the title of his chapter in Orthodoxy. And he says, a maniac will often be right about one thing, but very wrong about everything else. He might sense that, for instance, at times conspiracies happen, that somebody is out to get him. But that feeling is translated in the maniac's mind to everyone's out to get me. And so what the reason I'm saying that is because this little clip, they are often, we often say the two virtues of freedom and liberty in the sense that they're two virtues. It's really this two different words for the same thing. Do you get it? What's the difference between liberty and freedom? It's just a different word for the same thing. So anyways, the United States was a great force in the history of the world. So, but notice he said, and here's where I got to point out a little. At one point he said, America was needed to bring about and establish religious freedom in the modern world. And for that, I want to applaud him. Yes, he's right. Then he goes on to say, and I know he didn't mean to see this little trip up, but I see it as a trip up, because then he says, religious liberty didn't exist until America invented it in the 18th century, 1700s, 1776, if you want to put a date to it. See what I'm saying? I want to say, wait a minute. It is the modern incarnation of this need for religious liberty. However, it wasn't invented willy-nilly. I want to say, and I'm going to plant this in your brain, and I want you to remember this forever, that the Roman Empire had tremendous religious liberty, much like the kind of religious liberty that was established in the United States. However, the religious liberty that was a part of the Roman Empire was open to all religions of the pagan world. And then in comes Christianity. Christianity, at that phase of world history, became a great thorn in the side of the Roman Empire, and therefore many people had to be killed in order to preserve the great sense of religious liberty. The difference with the American sense of religious liberty was basically about religious liberty for Protestant congregations. So that's not necessarily a lie that Larry Schweikart is saying, but it is, a certain sense, a half-truth. So, Nick, let me show you. Should we grab a break, or can I keep going? Okay, let's do another break, because there's more to analyze here from this interesting clip. God bless you. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change, AM 750 WNDZ.
Hey, this is Vinny. You remember me. St. Stan's School and City Life are presenting the first annual car show this Saturday, June 3rd. Now, I want you to bring your car to check it in between 10 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. Yeah, there'll be food, games, cars, and suds too. All day fun for the whole family until 5 p.m. That's right. there'll be awards for the top 30 cars. Maybe it could be your car. Maybe not. People's choice, of course. It's a democracy, right? Participating vehicle registration at saintstanschicago.org/event-forms. The registration's only $20 per car. You want to learn more? Call this number, 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560. And the proceeds go to St. Stan's Catholic School for Leadership, hosted by City Life Chicago. Bring your wheels this Saturday, June 3rd. Check your car in between 10 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. at St. Stan's School, one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. And I'll be looking for you.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
The Daughters of St. Paul are consecrated religious women founded 100 years ago to promote the gospel using all means of communications. I'm Sister Teresa Alethea. Our founder, Blessed James Alberio, said, "The motion picture has a psychological power over the human spirit because it takes hold of the whole person and strikes at all his faculties, physical and spiritual." Please join with us as we pray for those who are negatively affected by media. Heavenly Father, we pray in atonement for error and scandal spread throughout the world through the misuse of the media of social communication, and that media may be used to acknowledge and to make known that Jesus alone, the Word incarnate, is the perfect teacher who leads to eternal life. Amen. Waking up the world with social communication for 100 years. DaughtersofSt.Paul.com.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coyce here on the Winds of Change. And in the context of that last little
public... Each year, the President of the United States lights a national Christmas tree.
Okay. We'll get to where... Let's jump right into this clip from Larry Schweikart and the founding of religious tolerance in the United States.
That America... where people of all faiths are free to worship or not worship as they please, invented modern religious tolerance. This tolerance, which Americans take for granted, didn't exist anywhere in the world before America invented it. How did this
Roman
happen?
Empire.
To answer that, we have to look to America's origins, which were overwhelmingly religious and, to be precise, overwhelmingly Christian. To put it away, America became the religiously open nation that we know today because it was first a Christian nation, specifically a Protestant one.
He's right.
Let me explain.
Yes.
Until the beginning of the 16th century, religious life in Europe was dominated by the Catholic Church. All religious power was concentrated in the Pope and the Catholic clergy. They determined religious doctrine.
Okay, let's pause it right there, Nick, for a second. Now, did your brain get wrinkled right there? If you're listening, I hope you're listening intently, my friends. But my brain got wrinkled tremendously because I'm agreeing with him. He's making some points. Yes, it's true that the founders of the United States were trying to put this doctrine of religious freedom, but they didn't found it as the first time in human history. I think I said that before the break. The Roman Empire had a tremendous sense of religious tolerance. As a matter of fact, they were killing the early Christians because the early Christians wouldn't tolerate the God of the emperor. The early Christians were saying, we can't worship your God and our God at the same time because your God is a false God. Now, that really... ticked off the emperors, of course. They had to try to destroy Christians. So that wasn't happening in the founding time of the 13 colonies. But what he said, but I got to jump on. Remember, Nick, do you remember a couple of weeks ago, I put myself in the punishment room? I don't have to go to the punishment room very often, but and I wish Tony was here today because probably Tony... I'm sorry to say he's probably most familiar with the punishment room. He's been into the punishment room at least on Wednesdays while Father Coyce is here more. But anyways, I put myself in. And if you remember, my friends, why I put myself in the punishment room is because I was waxing intelligently about world history. And I said just what Larry Swihart said here when he said, oh, in the days when Catholicism dominated Europe. Now, I think almost everybody, and this guy is not a dumb man. He's a tremendously intelligent, wise. He's written a 900-page book on American history, my goodness gracious. And he deserves the punishment room as much as I do. Or maybe I deserve it more because I should know better. I'm pointing out to him his mistake. What is his mistake? His mistake, and everyone else who didn't have their brain wrinkled when he said what he said, when he said that Catholicism dominated Europe because they determined all religious doctrines. That's one of the worst readings of 1500 years that I could come up with. To say that the Pope and the bishops and priests, the Christians, dominated Europe is at best a bad joke. That's what I want you to sort of say. Because Protestant hadn't come to fore yet, because Catholicism was the only form of Christianity for 1500 years, if you ignore, for the time being, the break between East and West and the Orthodox churches, say that the Pope and the bishops dominated world history is laughable. It truly is. To look at the stories where you can look at the stories of action between religious and civil authorities, between popes and kings, between bishops and princes and all the rest, it was a constant battle. It was a constant struggle. And to say that the popes dominated the battles is wrong. It's just completely wrong. Many times the civil authorities dominated the church. As a matter of fact, many times the civil authorities imprisoned the church. Many times the emperors arrested popes, sent them. The first 300, almost 400 years of Christianity was dominated by Christian martyrs, many of whom were popes and bishops and catechists. It wasn't just that religious persecution was not just saved for clergy. It was anybody who stuck their head up. That's part of the reason why celibacy didn't even enter. It wasn't necessary because self-sacrifice was readily seen in anybody who was willing to be called a Christian. So the idea that what I want everybody to seriously reflect on is this myth or this way of telling not only American history but world history in general, that Catholicism, vis-a-vis popes and bishops and priests and catechists, dominated the history. They would have liked to have dominated history more, and to the extent that there was only one brand of Christianity, you could say, well, they took the role. And then notice how even Albert Schweitzer, I keep wanting to call him Albert Schweitzer because that's a different author, but Larry Swihart, the author of the book American Patriots History, and a little bit later, we're going to play this just a little bit more, but he uses the word dominates. So he uses the word dominates in a negative way when talking about Catholicism domination of European history, but he uses the same word dominates when he's talking about America and Protestant domination in a very positive way. Let's go a little bit more.
The power structure was top down.
Power structure.
All that changed in 1517 when Martin Luther, a German priest, led a revolt that came to be known as the Protestant Reformation. The theme of the Reformation was that people should be free to interpret the Bible and manage their houses of worship as they saw fit. A bottom-up power structure.
Okay, let's pause it there for a second. Can we pause it there? Because did your brain get wrinkled again, my friends? My brain is wrinkling so much. I need an ironing board over here.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Well, most people wouldn't. Here, it's a classic interpretation of what the Protestant Reformation, so-called, was about. This is what he said, and I quote, "The theme of Martin Luther's Reformation was, people should be free to interpret the Bible and manage their houses of worship as they saw fit." Okay? Now, if you're an investigative theologian like myself, always looking for the angle and the truth and what is right, what's not so right, what's wrong. And again, it's not a lie to say what he said. That's a halfway of explaining what the Protestant Reformation was, and for the half that is right, I'm going to applaud America for picking up on that. But of these words, let me read it again. What he said. This is a quote: "People should be free to interpret the Bible and manage their houses of worship as they sought fit." And there's an uproar of applause. Yes, that is the great contribution of Martin Luther and vis-a-vis then of America. However, what word in that phrase, my friends, should wrinkle your brain the most? Okay, this is a little quiz. What word in that phrase, in that interpretation of the Protestant Reformation, I'm going to suggest that there are three words that most people would say are the key words. Number one, freedom. The people should be free. And so we're saying, yes, let us concentrate on that word, free. Or perhaps the word interpret, as in interpret the Bible. And that's what freedom is needed, the freedom to interpret the Bible. And so a lot of people might underline and try to highlight the importance of interpretation, individual interpretation. And that is an important word, my friends. That is an important word, and a lot could be said about it. Or there's a third word that you might cling to as one of the key phrases of what Larry is sharing with us when you key on the word worship. Manage their houses of worship as they see fit. We shouldn't have to stick to rules and regulations about what worship is or can be. And so there's these three words: freedom or free, interpretation, and worship. Are those the key words? And I want to say, no, you're missing the key word. You're missing the key word that is the stumbling block, my friends, that we pass over it like we pass over a crack in our foundation when we're looking at a house and you're thinking about buying a beautiful house and it has beautiful walls and it has beautiful chimney and it has beautiful bedrooms and beautiful bathrooms. But you miss the crack in the foundation. And for that, they're going to sell that house to you for a cheap price. And so the crack in this foundation is the word people. The word people. Let me read it again. The theme of the Protestant Reformation is, and this is what Larry Swikart says, people should be free to interpret the Bible and manage their houses of worship as they see fit. Oh, how beautiful that sounds. But the word people is the stumbling block. Which people are we talking about? Because he goes on to say very beautifully, let's use one more. We're not going to be able to finish this. Okay, we'll save it for, we'll bring on another Wednesday. We're going to, maybe I'll chop up the I have to chop up the clips, as it were, because it gets a little complicated. It's a little technical radio talk here between Nick and I. And Nick is a master at that board, but even a master electronic man cannot do the impossible. That is, he is the one, but not the one. But anyways, let me finish what I'm trying to say here. Do you see how the interpretation of the American experiment is based on some half-truths here? And to appreciate the fullness of the truth, Larry goes on to say how the 13 colonies quickly fell into doctrinal disputes. He admits quite readily that all the 13 colonies, as they tried to set up, they tried to set up exactly what they fled. What did they flee? State-sponsored religion. And as a matter of fact, he points out that the Puritans, when they got, he said, the most zealous of the reformers in England were the Puritans and fled for America. I have to sound my little alarm. A little historical inaccuracy, my wonderful friend, because the Puritans first did not go to the Americas. First, they went to the Netherlands. They thought, we'll be able to set up our beautiful Puritan religion over there across the English Channel, where the birthplace of Protestant Reformation took place. But they soon found even over there, they weren't welcome. And to say that they broke away from England because England was not very zealous in its Reformation is to ignore all the Catholics that lost their heads and all the religious persecution, all the saints that were martyred. And to say that King Henry VIII and Queen Elizabeth were not zealous in their implementation of the Protestant Reformation is to completely ignore the blood of those martyrs. And so and Leer Schweikart points out how we should and we can. And I do appreciate the great risk that those Puritans took when they piled onto those little rickety ships we know as the Mayflower and the other ships, just like Columbus when he crossed the ocean, what a risk that was. However, my friends, that if we are going to applaud the Puritans for taking a great risk in running, leaving and crossing the ocean to establish their religion here, we must also appreciate other Christians that came before them that were willing to take a risk. And that risk I'm referring to as the early martyrs of the church. The early martyrs of the church, they entered a boat that was even more dangerous than the Puritans when the Puritans jumped on their Mayflower and crossed the ocean. It was a risk, no doubt. They had to sell so much of their home and property life. They were risking all to establish their new society. But that's not the level of self-sacrifice that the early martyrs of the church did for the first 300-400 years and so many others since them. So is it really the fullness of the faith there? I'm afraid not, my friends. We need to see these, and we'll finish this little interview later. I'm Father Tom Coase. You've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? To say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see?
each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time.